hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
X-Go, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
X-Go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. And joining me is Rockets expert and contributor to the Rocket Fuel podcast on the Believe Network. You know him as Vader. Great to see you, Vader. Finally, good to get you here. And am I missing any of your credits? Did I miss anything you're working on these days?
No, I don't really like talking about myself, but I appreciate you for having me on the show. One thing I will plug, though, is we do watch the Rockets games live on the playback. It's called the Houston Live Room. You can find that on Twitter. And then there's a link that'll take you to it. I do that with Libretto. I do it with Will and then J-Dub. And so, like, yeah, tap into that. Like, everything else, like, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, at Vader Sports. But other than that, man, like, just thank you for having me. Like, I know I've been talking to you for over a year in Twitter spaces, and you always have great takes. You know, sometimes they're controversial. But one thing I can always say about you, Robert, is you keep it real and you kind of stay true to, like, what you believe in. And, like, I appreciate that. You don't, not a lot of flip-flopping, not a lot of, like, saying stuff just because you think it's what's popular to say. And so, like, I always got to respect that. Like, you know, a lot of people will say that you stand on business.
Yeah, no, for me, it's, I'm a fan, but I try to stay objective, and doing journalism for years, you just try to, you know, tell it like what you're seeing. And as a fan, I'm not one of the fanboys. I, you know, I'm about like, hey, what do we got to do to get this thing squared away? You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I know, like, I even previously, because you know, you do know this, because you've messaged me a few times. Like, I've been like on the Jalen Green bandwagon for a while, even when it looked bleak, even when he looked, I mean, I'm like, let's just be honest. I'll be honest. Like, he was not looking like a good basketball player. There were not very many signs that he would ever be a good basketball player, but it was just something there that I saw from a talent perspective. And I'm like, this dude's gonna figure it out. And I know there were plenty of times where you were like, hey, like, what are you seeing? Like, you even not even just trying to, you know, disagree with me, but just asking questions. So, like, I appreciate that. There's a lot of people like that we run into over the course of a day on social media who just want to get their takes off. They want to, you know, have a hot take, say something controversial. And there's a lot of talking and not a lot of listening. And so I will say, like, even though, like, we kind of, I won't say bumped heads because it's just differences of opinion at times. But, like, one thing I will always say is that you were willing to listen. And then if you disagreed, you would tell me. And then there were a lot of times, and I can honestly say, I'm like, yeah, he knows what he's talking about. He's right. But I probably didn't tell you you were right, but you were right. In a lot of those instances.
Yeah. And with Jalen, the thing is, I mean, everybody can say, oh, I thought he was going to be good. But come on. I mean, the way this has turned around, like, almost overnight, and not just – it's. You know, the thing with Jalen is it's not just one thing. It's everything turned. It's the defense. It's the shooting. It's the finishing inside. It was like all clicked immediately and went to a whole different level immediately. And, you know, one of my things that I'm big on, and I you heard me say this many times on the spaces is, you know, to me, Jalen, I can't even consider him a real guy until he starts playing defense and starts doing stuff when the ball is not in his hands, because that's all anybody wants to talk about. You know, as far as fans go, they're going to want to talk about his shooting or his offense or whatever. But I'm like, you know, if Jalen doesn't have the basketball, what's he doing? Defense, rebound, assist. But, like, you know, we've seen all that. You know, that's all of a sudden it's there. It all is out of nowhere.
And I will admit, like, kind of what he's doing is unprecedented. I saw somebody post something like a day or two ago, and they were genuinely like perplexed. They like, how does a guy go from being like a bottom five player in the NBA to a top five player in the NBA?
Yeah.
Over the course of a month. And like, there's no, like, there's almost no precedence to this. Like, you can't really look, you know, in the same season where a guy was as bad as Jalen Green was. He was getting played off the floor. Ime Udoka literally had to bench him in order for the team to be somewhat competitive. I mean, he was getting benched for Aaron Holiday, right? A guy who, like, when we signed Aaron Holiday, we were like, oh, he's going to be like a good practice player. And so now you know, fast forward to March, when Jalen Green goes off the floor, I get nervous. I'm like, oh, crap. I wonder if we can survive these minutes where Jalen Green is on the bench, because he's like literally like one of the highest, if not the highest plus minus guy in the NBA during the month of March. And like you said, in the spaces, and this was one of the things that I felt like you were right about, and I probably didn't give you your flowers on, like, Jalen Green had to be more than just a scorer. And so I will admit that I was not sure if he was ever going to be more than just a scorer. I always felt confident that he would figure out how to at least be some kind of a microwave scorer where he could, you know, put points up in bunches or whatever. But like, being a good defender, wasn't so sure. Rebounding, he never got 10 rebounds in a game. Why would I think he could do that all of a sudden, right? Assists, all of these other little things that he just never did, right? And he I forgot, somebody else had posted, like, he had played like 200 or more games and never had a double-double. And I'm like, man, that is not good. And then suddenly he rattled off a bunch of double-doubles in a row. He got a triple-double. So, yeah, I will admit, I thought he would bounce back, but to the degree that he's bounced back is something that I did not even, you know, foresee. So, yeah, I can't even, like, hold it against other people who were like, yeah, I'm not sure what kind of player Jalen's going to be. And a lot of people always would point to the fact, like, you know, a shooting guard of his archetype is probably, like, the least valuable type of player in the NBA. When you think about that, there was not much to, like, argue against that, because, like, in order to be, like, a really good player to be considered in the top 20 in the NBA, you know, you can't just be a scorer. You know, like, you have to be able to bring something else to the table, whether it be playmaking or rebounding or something defensively. We just never really saw those glimpses. And like you said, suddenly he started doing them all at once. And yeah. Like, how? So yeah. props to Jalen Green, first and foremost, for working through, you know, all of those struggles, whether they were mental or whatever they were. And then also props to Ime Udoka, because he held him accountable. And that was something that we always said going into the season, that we wanted a coach that was going to hold these guys accountable and make them better. And he made sure, like, hey, I don't care if you're scoring or not, you're going to play defense. I need you to make the right plays out there.
We're recording this March the 30th, Saturday. It's 11 straight, 13 of 14 games. Besides Jalen, what's impressed you the most about the Rockets this month?
I'm going to first start with Amen Thompson, because, like, we drafted Amen Thompson. I'm thinking he's going to be like a point guard, you know, who's going to, you know, I hype my guys at Ray. I'm like, he's going to revolutionize the game. 6'7" point guard, 7-foot wingspan, 40 plus inch vertical, fast, probably S tier athlete, right? This man has, during this win streak, he's been playing power forward. And not only has he been playing power forward, he's like been the second best player on the team. He had 25 and 15 the previous game. He had 18 and 14 last night. I think he's had at least 4 assists in both of those games as well. He's always had the ball in his hands. I think Ime Udoka even brought that up. He's a guy who's always had the ball in his hands, but he's embraced the coaching. They've showed him how to become a good screener. They showed him how to play the dunker spot. They've showed him film of guys like his brother, Asar, out in Detroit. I think I forgot who else he said. It might have been Giannis. I don't remember exactly. But he showed him some film of some other guys, you know, with similar athleticism who were taking advantage of, you know, not necessarily, you know, they can't shoot, right? But how can you contribute to the game? And he's gone out there and he's picked it up in space. There was a lot of times in the game against Utah where he facilitated from the high post. They were running like a split action type of thing. There was like a scissor cut going on between like Fred and Jalen Green. And he was able to get Jalen the ball going downhill. And then, you know, off of that, roll to the basket. He had 8 offensive rebounds. So, man, like, Amen Thompson to me is like been like the biggest revelation outside of Jalen Green during this win streak. His plus minus is also like something ridiculous. Offensive rebounding, that he's just doing all the like little dirty work things. I'm thinking like he's not even having a really good game. And then I look at the stat sheet and I'm like, oh, wow. Like he's like contributing in every facet of the game. So to me, Amen, also just Ime Udoka's ability to change things up. Like, losing Şengün, who objectively has been your best player for the entire season, losing him is a big loss. They have had to adjust to that. Like, I know coming out of All-Star break, they did pick up the pace. There was a mandate to shoot more 3-pointers, and we saw that before he even got injured. But when you lose a hub like him, when you lose a low post scorer who you can just dump the ball down to and you can rely on either get himself a good shot or a good shot for others, I think it kind of forced Udoka to expand his playbook, expand the way he thought the game. And so you see Amen Thompson in different areas. You see Jalen Green running point guard a lot more. You see like him kind of utilizing these parts. And I think it's very exciting. I think the challenge for him, though, when Şengün does come back, is how do I take some of the things that Jalen does best and some of the things that Şengün does best, and you know, now I know that Amen Thompson is really good at this. How do you incorporate all of those things to where you have like this, you know, offense that it can be like a top offense in the NBA?
Yeah, with Amen, there's always this conversation about his position, where he's going to play. And when you can defend just about any position at an elite level, you can rebound at an elite level, and you can have his vision as a passer. Does his position matter, Vader? Don't you just insert him at whatever position where you believe he's an upgrade in the starting lineup?
At first, I would argue with you about this a month ago, but given the way he's played recently over this win streak, I really wanted him to play point guard. And the reason being is because I felt like he had a positional advantage every night. Who can match up with this dude at point guard? You know, 6'7" and his physical gifts that I rattled off earlier.
Yeah, like, it's his best position to be a superstar as a point guard, I think.
Right.
For sure.
But like, he played power forward for the majority of the game yesterday, and he got 18 points and 14 rebounds. He got 25 points and 15 rebounds the game before that. He's just a Swiss Army knife. You can put him at pretty much any position. He can guard pretty much every position. Yeah, you probably can't put him on Jokic. You can't put him on Embiid and guys like that. But who can really guard those guys, right? But like, from what we've seen in small lineups, he's been able to guard the other team's power forward. He's been able to be strong enough to kind of keep the other team's center at least at bay, to where they were forced to take a tough shot. And then like, we know what kind of speed and leaping ability and instincts that he has. So the crazy thing is, the fact that he is so good at power forward kind of makes me wonder about the security of some of the other guys on the roster. Because like, he kind of can play like a Draymond Green. And Frank's been saying this for a while, And I think now we're seeing it come to fruition where like the way Golden State deploys Draymond Green, the Rockets could theoretically deploy Amen in a similar fashion from that power forward position or from small forward position as well.
Yeah, we're going to get into what's going to happen next year in a bit. But, you know, if you're a fan of my content or Vader's, this might not be for you because you guys are smarter than I think a lot of people are. I'm just going to say that, Vader. I say our people are smarter. But I do want to speak to the whole idea that Şengün was holding back Jalen and that sort of myth, which will lead me to a serious question for you in a second. So here's the deal. Şengün, he wasn't stopping Jalen from hitting threes. He wasn't
wide open threes.
Yeah. I mean, he was missing those. Şengün was creating threes for Jalen. Şengün wasn't why Jalen couldn't finish around the rim. He's become way more physical on his drives, I believe, and more crafty in his finishes. Şengün wasn't stopping Jalen from playing tough defense. There were also plenty of minutes when Jalen played without Şengün. So why didn't we see this then? I love how sort of the drive-by experts, I'll call them, miss all this. But Vader, do you see anything legit to Jalen and Şengün getting in each other's way? For example, does Jalen need the ball in his hands more to get in a rhythm offensively? Is that something that's true?
So I don't think the correlation is necessarily Şengün and Jalen Green related. I think they play very well off each other. I think we have data going all the way back to their rookie seasons. A lot of Jalen Green's 40-point games and 30-point games came off of the gravity of Şengün. Şengün was such a good guy as far as screening for him, finding him when he was open. And then there was also that game this season where they both scored 30 points and had 12 rebounds or whatever. Like, they can play together. I don't think that the correlation between whether or not Jalen is having a good game has anything to do with Alperen Şengün. So I want to get that out of the way. I do, however, think that he does need the ball in his hands more. But that is a Fred VanVleet thing, right? So, like, what we saw yesterday, and if you go back and watch the game, Jalen Green ran point guard for the majority of the game. And by point guard, I mean he brought the ball up the court and initiated the offense a lot, right? And so, like, I think earlier in the season, Ime had Jalen off the ball a lot more. Fred VanVleet was the guy who was responsible for like running a lot of those pick and roll actions with Şengün. A byproduct of that is maybe he does need to touch the ball in order to get in more of a rhythm. Like you said, he was still missing wide open shots. He was still missing layups. So a lot of the blame, a lot of the responsibility on that it goes back to Jalen. Like, you got to be better. Like, if you get a wide open shot, you got to knock it down at a respectable clip. And he was not doing that. But I do think Udoka is starting to see like, hey, Jalen can handle more responsibility. And I think he's been forced to do that because honestly, without having the Şengün hub, you know, to fall back on, he's had to rely on Jalen a lot more. And so like you see Fred VanVleet be able to play a more optimized role as a guy who is a really great spot up shooter, as a guy who can be a good secondary facilitator. And so like, I'm excited about that. Like, I don't think these are things that can't be done when Şengün comes back. Like, obviously Şengün and Jalen have always had a really good like two-man game.
Oh, you know, yeah.
We just didn't see it a whole lot because he was running in with Fred. And Fred is very limited. When Fred runs a pick and roll, he's not going to get rim pressure. You know, the defense can play that a certain kind of way. And they started doing that and they took away a lot of like what Şengün really likes to do. But when you do that against Jalen, Jalen can get to the basket. Jalen can hit a mid-range. Jalen can do a step back and hit a three. So I think these are the kind of things that you see utilized with like the Denver Nuggets. When you see Jamal Murray and Jokic, when you see De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis, probably more with De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis, they run a lot more two-man. But no, I don't think necessarily Şengün was holding Jalen Green back in any sense of the matter. But I do think that Ime Udoka has figured out by necessity, hey, yeah, this is what Jalen Green is good at. Because there's even times now where you see like when Jabari's at the five, where the whole floor is lifted. It's a five out. Jalen Green has all of the space to do things, and they don't run that all the time. But we do see that can work now. And then you see Amen Thompson kind of playing Shingun's role, right? He comes up to the high post, and that is. Şengün can do that, right? So, like, no, I'll be excited to see when Şengün comes back what they can do, but I do think that there needs to be some more variety to what they do.
Are you ready to give Şengün and Jalen a max extension this summer?
So first of all, it's a rookie max, so it's not like the max that like a guy like James Harden or somebody would get.
Right. They call it the fun max. I think Brian Windhorst calls it the fun max.
Yeah, the fun max. Yeah. So, like, if you would have asked me this a month ago, I say Şengün gets it absolutely. Jalen make him wait, but like if Jalen. We have a murderer's row to end the season. You get to see Jalen against all playoff teams. So we're going against Dallas. I forget the exact schedule.
Yeah, the next six of them are playoff teams for sure. They got a couple of gimmies late in the season, but yeah, the next six are all playoff.
Right. So at the very tail end of the season, I think we get Utah and Portland again. But other than that, I think every other team we play is playoff teams. And then, of course, we play the Clippers the last game. They might be low managing at that point because they got a bunch of geriatrics on the team. But like, if Jalen finishes the season and leaves this team without Tari Eason, who objectively, when he got injured, was probably at worst a top four player on his team. I think you could even make an argument that he was a top three impactful player on the team. Didn't have him the whole season. You lost Şengün for the last 20 some odd games or whatever. And for him to like lead the group that we're seeing him lead to a above 500 record, I think it's very tough to not offer him a max. You know what I mean? I don't know how you don't do it.
Yeah, it's getting hard because, and I also think there's going to be a definite dynamic of, you know, giving one to Şengün over Jalen might say something to Jalen's camp or might, you know, because it's massaging egos all the time in the NBA. So you worry about that as well. And, you know, are their contracts going to be similar too, you know, exactly the same, or are you going to give, you know, somebody's going to get a little bit more than the other one?
You know what I've heard that's been kind of like, I don't want to call it ridiculous. I don't want to insult people, but people have been saying they would give Jalen Green the max and not give Şengün the max. And I'm like, how do you approach that conversation with Alperen Şengün? how do you approach that conversation with Şengün, who like carried your team for like more than half of the season? Like, hey, we're going to give Jalen the max, but we're going to, so I just don't see how you can offer it to one and not the other, kind of piggybacking off of what you were
working on. Well, yeah. And if you don't offer it to Şengün, I just think he's going to go into free agency and you're going to eventually have to give it to him, I guess, you know, because, you know, it'll be restricted. So somebody's going to offer it to him. So you might as well get ahead of it right now and not burn the bridge or anything like that going forward, you know, keep a great relationship with him.
If you feel like these two guys can be two top 25, two top 30 players in the NBA, I think the important thing is not, we keep trying to get rid of one of them. Like as a fan base, like we keep trying to get rid of one of these guys. And I think the real question is like, what are the pieces that you need to put around these guys in order for them to be successful? Obviously you need more shooting. We haven't seen Şengün with knockdown shooters yet. Like he gets double and triple teamed and like he kicks it out to a lot of guys who just throwing up bricks. And Jalen was one of those guys that was throwing up bricks earlier.
Well, I kept saying this though. Jalen was the guy that was the bricklayer because VanVleet, he shot. I mean, he's a good shooter. You know, it's above average as a 3-point shooter. Dylan Brooks has had it, you know, for him, it's a really good year as a 3-point shooter. You know, he's fallen off a little bit, but he's still at 36%, which I think is about really average as a 3-point shooter. It's not below average for sure. And then Aaron Holiday, you know, has come in and played a lot of minutes and he's been good at three. Jabari's, you know, he's become an average 3-point shooter, jumping up from bad last year. So, you know, it's, yeah, Amen, but Amen's doing so many other things. I don't worry about Amen because when he does, you know, put the ball up, the ball's going in the basket most of the time. Unfortunately, he can only do it from about 5 feet away, but still.
I think they do need like a movement shooter, a guy that can kind of like run off screens or whatever. I don't think we have that. At this point, you got to look at roster construction, the guys around Jalen Green, the guys around Alperen Şengün. That's going to be Raphael Stone's biggest test this offseason. It's like, what do we put, like, how do I build a roster around these guys to where we can compete for a top six seed next season?
Yeah, I've been asking Rockets followers, because, you know, we're talking about construction of this team. I've been asking them, assuming no blockbuster trade this summer, you know, who their starting five would be next year. And let me be clear, Vader, I'm not asking you who Udoka's starters will be, because it might be a whole other story. I'm giving you the clipboard. I'm asking you, who you got? And I'm just going to assume a Fred, Jalen, and Şengün are kind of locks. So three guys are probably locked into your three.
So those three are locked. And then you don't want to start Amen Thompson because he can't shoot. But then you look at all of the other things that he does. And like, who else on this team is getting a 25 and 15 other than Alperen Şengün? Like name somebody. Like I don't think anybody's done it, right? And so it's like, how do you put a guy like that on the bench who can in any given, and he's been a double-double machine as a starter. He's been a guy who like, you don't have to run plays for. He's a guy who is very good at playing off other guys. He gets you second chance opportunities. He hustles. And then he's probably, and I'm not even trying to like gas it up or anything, because I think Tari Eason is that dude too. He's probably our best defensive player. Like when he's locked in, it's out of Tari and it's out of a man. And so like putting that guy on the bench who does all those other things.
He's a W. You know, that's what Ahmed is. He's a W.
I have to start him. And so like now it has to be creative. You have to be creative as a coaching staff. You have to probably run more like split action things. You probably got to run more things where there's empty side where, you know, he can be in a dunker spot or whatever. But like there has to be a way where you put your best players on the floor together.
He was the dunker spot guy. Remember when Şengün was playing with him before he got hurt, you know, for those few weeks there.
Right. And so like that's what I'm imagining. So I'm thinking like Fred, I'm thinking Jalen Green, I'm thinking, and see, here's the tricky part. Because Amen Thompson can play, obviously he can play the power forward. He's shown us that. He can also play small forward because he's played that as well. So do you want to start Jabari or Dylan Brooks? I think that's kind of what it boils down to. Tari Eason has made a huge case that he should be starting. I think we don't have enough sample size on his shooting for me to like go ahead and start Amen and Tari together. But ideally, I'm not going to lie to you, that's my fun lineup. That's the lineup I want to see. I want to see Jalen Green, Amen Thompson, and Tari Eason on the floor together. That's what I want to see. That to me is going to be good hoops. But like just to start the game with, I'm gonna leave Jabari in there. I think Jabari might take a leap next year. Like I'm gonna cross my fingers. I think he took a leap this year in his second season, and I think maybe by next year we start seeing like what he's going to be. You know, we always talk about that third year leap or whatever, and this will give him like two full seasons in the NBA and another offseason to kind of hone his skills. So Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Amen Thompson, Jabari Smith Jr., Alperen Şengün, lock it in.
Yeah, the thing with Jabari, I feel like it almost would help him to be on the bench because I don't feel like he gets the ball enough to really get comfortable as an offensive weapon. And maybe if he's coming off the bench, that would help him. And, you know, there's no question that both Tari and Amen have looked better than Jabari at this point. The other guy, question mark, is Dylan. And, you know, Dylan's defense to me has fallen off. And I don't know if that's something that's going to be rectified with some rest and maybe that injury never quite.
That's what I was about to say, Robert. I have my fingers crossed that, but did he hurt his oblique or something like that? I don't remember, yeah. But I feel like maybe that's still hampering him and we just don't talk about it because he's clearly not been the same defender he was pre-injury.
Yeah. The other question I was going to pose to you, and maybe this is the more apt question, who's your closing five? Is it any different than your starting five next year?
Okay. So I love Tari Eason, man. He makes some bonehead plays, but he almost always makes up for it. A lot of the guys I like are just so streaky when it comes to shooting. I'm just a little hesitant to put them all out on the floor together, but like Amen Thompson wreaks havoc defensively. Tari Eason is going to wreak havoc defensively. Jalen Green, as of late, knock on wood. I don't have any wood near me. If you do, please knock on it. But Jalen Green has been an impactful defensive player. He's been stealing the ball, like stripping guys, blocking shots. So those three guys. And then, you know, obviously you want Şengün out there unless he's having a stinker or whatever. And then, you know, Fred is always, a guy who's a threat to knock down a clutch shot. So I don't know. My closing five, man, for me, I just don't see a world where I don't have Tari in my optimum closing five. But, I mean, you always can make an argument for Dylan Brooks. You can always make an argument if Jabari's having a good game that he should be out there. But, yeah, I want Tari on the floor. Like, give me Tari, man. I'm going to live with his mistakes. And I still think Tari has a lot of, like, untapped potential. Like, we didn't – unfortunately, he, like, lost the whole year, basically. So as far as, like, his development. But I think Tari has an opportunity to be a lot better than what we think he can be because he's already shown that – he's willing to work on his jumper and that he made that actually like what was supposed to be a weakness in his game. It was actually pretty reliable at one point. And then he does a lot of almost everything else you want him to do. You just want him to like up his basketball IQ. We've seen Ime Udoka help Jalen Green in that regard. Hopefully he can also like help Tari.
Yeah. The thing about Tari, as you said, there's not a sample size in his shooting, but he pretty much always hovers around that 36% mark, which is what you're getting from Dylan Brooks. So really there's not a big difference between those two. And defensively, Tari just causes more havoc. He's a way better rebounder, which to me, that's the real separator between him and Dylan Brooks is the rebounding. You can say, you know, a healthy Dylan Brooks, maybe you're nitpicking on defense, but the rebounding is just a major difference between those two guys. And the steals, of course, too, he does a good job of that without fouling, which Dylan Brooks has foul issues all the time. So, you know, that's another part of the equation. I also wanted to ask you, assuming Fred, Dylan, and Steven Adams are all here next year and none of the six core dealt either in the offseason, what type of addition, meaning type of skill set, do you believe the Rockets need to add? You said a movement shooter, that's really your number one guy right there.
Yeah, I'm thinking if as long as Steven Adams can be like the Steven Adams that we know, I think that kind of solves the backup center like hole that we've had most of the year until Jock Landale actually started like looking like an NBA player again, because he was scaring me for a long time there. I was like, man, I know his contract is still valuable, but like he was not providing any of the quality minutes that we thought he would give us when they brought him in. I don't know. We still don't have a vertical rim running big, right? I wouldn't mind them investing into like a draft pick and bringing a guy like that in that they can develop, like kind of like Clint Capella, you know, a guy you can send down to the G League for a little while and let him get some seasoning. But, you know, we don't have that athletic Derek Lively mold type of guy where, you know, the guys where you could just get into the lane and you just throw the ball up there and they can dunk it. We saw that a lot in the Harden era where we had guys who could be play finishers like that. I wouldn't mind having that kind of guy, a guy who can be a rim deterrent. We saw how good like Jock Landale, you know, has surprisingly been like a good rim protector, you know, over the past few games, right? So like just imagine having a guy who can do that consistently, a young guy who can do that consistently and who can also, you know, have that athleticism to be like a vertical threat for you on drives. Like, so I would love to see them add a player like that. And then, like I said before, like the a movement shooter, a guy that can run off screens, who doesn't need to have his feet quick release, doesn't really need to have his feet set that much and can knock it down, you know, with you know, some 40% accuracy, something like that. That would be a huge addition as well. So to me, those are the kind of guys you kind of need. With Jalen Green bouncing back, it kind of like eliminates the need to bring in another ball dominant player. You know, like maybe a month or two ago, I was looking at the draft with the Brooklyn Nets pick. You know, this guy might be gone by then, but like I was looking at like Rob Dillingham, And then obviously like a guy like Reed Sheppard, who doesn't need the ball. He could be more of that movement shooter type of dude. So like those are two guys I was looking at before, and now I'm not so sure, like with the resurgence of Jalen Green, but definitely rim running big, lob threat, movement shooter.
Yeah, I'm at the point where a lob threat might be a little bit overrated. And also I think Amen sort of a lob threat if, you know, he starts to be used a little bit differently. Also, believe it or not, I would like, my number one thing right now might just be Fred VanVleet insurance. Tyus Jones and Monty Morris are free agents. It's not sexy, but I think I'd rather add a quality backup point guard and keep around Uncle Jeff and Landale as 11th and 12th man for injury insurance and good vets. Halfway through next year, you might have a better idea of what the team's weaknesses are. So Landale and, you know, obviously Jeff and potentially Jayshon Tate, I assume you're just going to pick his option up, exercise that. They can all be great trade chips, but if you go after some movement shooter, you know, if you're going after like a Buddy Hield, some a guy like that, you know, there's a couple guys like that around Grayson Allen, you're likely going to have to get rid of just to make the space, I think, Jeff and Landale and Green. Whereas, you know, I like the idea of, you know, that guy might just be a luxury in some ways, because the wings for the most part with the Rockets are going to be, you know, Tari and Amen and Dylan Brooks and Jabari and Cam and Jay. I mean, those are your wings you're going to want to play most of the time. So, you know, a guy that's a movement shooter, unless he can be a ball handler, is, I don't know, it might just be a luxury. Whereas with injuries, I might rather have those other three guys as all insurance for all those positions. And then if you think, okay, we're at the deadline, now we got to go after this, we need this particular thing. We got all those three things in the arsenal to go after that.
And that's a good point, because it's like, if you do bring in a movement shooter, like you were saying, like who does he beat out? Like he has to actually beat out the guys in front of him, and the guys in front of him are really good. So,
and you have to pay him probably 15 to 20 million. And that money, I'm not sure if they can afford to do that and keep all these other guys along. So you're probably going to lose one of those guys. And I guess my thing is, a movement shooter is like a great thing, but I don't feel like it's as big a difference as having, you know, three guys as opposed to one that can all help in case Fred gets hurt, which he has an injury history. Dylan's got it, the oblique stuff. You know, I'm worried about Shane Goon's ankle now a little bit. So all of those type of stuff.
And see, that's why I think like a guy like Reed Sheppard, who can probably, like, he's not going to be your like backup point guard, right? But he can play point guard, like theoretically, like he can play that position offensively, but off the ball, if you understand what I'm saying. Because like it looks like they're going more towards Jalen is going to be handling the ball a lot more, right? And then, you know, you still have Amen Thompson, who, like, if we're saying maybe Amen is not the point guard of the future right now, we don't know yet, you know, because he still has to develop his handle. And so, like, bringing in a guy like Reed Sheppard who can slot in at point guard by de facto, like, I guess like a Patrick. Remember how Patrick Beverly used to play with James Harden? He's more like off ball dude, play defense, knock down open threes. And so, like, that probably might be the only place you can stick somebody, right? Because, like, Aaron Holiday is just kind of like a guy who, you know, he's not going to be here long term. You know, he may be here another season or whatever, but he's not probably in the plans for the future. And so, like, that spot behind Fred VanVleet, if Amen Thompson is going to be a wing from now on, or, you know, a power forward, you know, whatever, then, yeah, that gives minutes. You know, that's probably the best spot, you know, to find some minutes.
You know, as we go towards this last few games, even though the Rockets are just one game back, the odds still aren't great. I want to remind everybody they need to keep in mind, because Golden State owns the tiebreaker, it's essentially a two-game lead with just 9 games left for both teams. The Rockets have the 6th toughest schedule. The Warriors have the 24th toughest schedule. And we are now Mavs fans because they play the Mavs, Golden State does, both before and after the Rockets matchup with Golden State on Thursday. Vader, they could really use Cam's offense back in the lineup, because without more scoring, it's like you can't afford Jalen to be just even off a little bit against these 6 playoff teams coming up.
Yeah, so that's one thing I saw in the interview yesterday. They were hoping Cam was hoping that he could be able to play Sunday. So we'll see, man. I have my fingers crossed. We do need we need all hands on deck, all available hands on deck. So he'd definitely be, you know, somebody that I would welcome back into the lineup. Because right now, like, we see Reggie Bullock getting spot minutes. We've seen Jayshon Tate come in the game, and it just kind of depends on you know, Jayshon Tate's not a scorer. You know, he's going to go out there and he's going to give you hustle minutes and go after loose balls and foul people and, yeah. And like, you know what I mean? And so, like, Cam is a guy who, you know, in 15 minutes, he might score 17 points or 20 points. And that's one thing, like you said, like Jalen started with 4 points in the first half yesterday. And I was like, this is not ideal, because who else can we go to that can score, right? Like, we don't have like a lot of guys who are just like bucket getters. We got, you know, guys who, like, if they start knocking down some threes, then hopefully, you know, they can put some points up like Fred. But you know, other than that, like I was pretty concerned. So, but fortunately, he came out and dropped 20 in the third, and you know, they were able to pull it out. But yeah, having Cam back would be huge. I think the odds of the Rockets making the playoffs is, it's a long shot. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm probably one of the most optimistic fans you'll probably ever talk to. A few days ago, I was a lot more optimistic about it, but then Miami didn't play Jimmy Butler against Golden State, and they ended up having a bad game. And then Orlando went out there and put up a stinker. Like Jalen Suggs and Paolo Banchero, like, played really, really bad against Golden State. And those were honestly, to me, two games that I thought Golden State was going to lose, and they won both of those games. So that kind of put us behind the eight ball in regards to our playoff hopes. But I will say this, regardless of whether or not they make the play-in or not, I think that if you objectively look at the season, as long as they finish out, you know, even 500, you can't do anything but like see this as a successful season, right? I think Vegas only had our odds of winning games at like 31 or 32. And then like we've exceeded that by far. And we've done so, like I said, without Tari Eason, without Alperen Şengün in a large chunk of games. Dylan Brooks has missed some time. Fred VanVleet was out for a little bit of time. You know, the only consistent person there was Jalen Green. And Jalen Green was not really there, right? He was not really there for like, you know, the whole first half of the season for the most part, with some spot games here and there. So I think overall, Ime Udoka has done a fantastic job coaching these guys. And I think as long as they finish 41-41, I'm going to be happy with the outcome of this season.
Yeah, I also feel like it's worth reminding everybody how good a job Udoka has done, not just developing these guys, but look at how many games that he's lost between Tari, Amen, and Cam, you know, because you have to look at what those guys lost also with the G League and the injuries that they've had. It's about 140 games that you've lost between, oh, Şengün as well. So between all those guys you've lost, I want to say like around 140 games in that neighborhood. And you've lost really 55 games or so of this Jalen Green that we didn't see that earlier in the season, but he lost a ton of games to injuries on rotation guy. And I'm not even including the few games that they've lost. I kind of factored in the VanVleet missed games. Dylan's missed a few games, but you know, you're going to miss some games, you know, with just bets or whatever through a season. But to have all these young guys and all the injuries that they've suffered and long stretches of the season, I mean, it's just, you know, it sure would be fun to see what they can do next year. And, you know, Steven Adams is a guy that, you know, they've had, but obviously they couldn't use him either. So it's like you're adding a bunch of guys next year if they can stay relatively healthy next year. And, you know, there is going to be injuries like there always are in the NBA season, but they've just lost a lot of guys, big chunks and key guys, I think, too.
Yeah, I've been kind of wondering, like, even if they don't make any like serious moves over the summer, like, what are their realistic odds of maybe leaping up into the top six next year? I know Phoenix is getting older. The Clippers are getting older. The Lakers are getting older. You know, those are some of the teams that are in front of them. I don't think anybody really anticipated like the OKC, the Minnesota Timberwolves jumping up to like being like an elite team in the Western Conference. I mean, it can happen just like that. You know, once you get your guys established and get a system in place and, you know, guys take those individual, you know, leaps, you know, with their gameplay, you see that. Daryl Morey used to talk about it all the time, like as far as like roster construction and making the team better. He's like, either he's going to have to trade for a guy who can like, you know, elevate the team, or there's going to have to be internal growth. This is kind of like the first time in a while we've seen like actual real internal growth. We saw with Alperen Şengün earlier in the season when he looked, you know, absolutely unstoppable before other teams started adjusting to him. And I think his back injury slowed him down a little bit. And now we're seeing it again with like Amen Thompson being a double-double machine without plays being run for him. And with Jalen Green suddenly becoming a top five player in the NBA over the past month. And even when I say that, it sounds weird. I feel like I'm like using hyperbole, but like, you know, by most statistical metrics, Jalen Green has been a top five player in the NBA over the past month. And that's crazy to think about. Like we said, when we know where he was in a gutter. He was in a gutter. He's getting played off the floor. He was trapped on the bench. And now like he's a guy who's been for the most part leading a team on the playoff push, you know, winning 11 games in a row. And so, yeah, next season, I do wonder what they would look like just stand pat. Bringing, you know, Tari coming back, Şengün coming back, having Steven Adams coming back. I know Steven Adams is a guy who I feel like had a tremendous impact on guys like Russell Westbrook and John Morant as far as being a good screen setter, being an enforcer, being a good offensive rebounder. He does bring a lot to the table if he's healthy. So, like, yeah, I'm excited about next season. Even if, like I say, even if they don't do a lot of things, I hope that, you know, I hope there's a deal out there that does help us improve. But, you know, if not, then, yeah, I'm ready to roll into next season with a healthy squad and see what they can do.
Yeah, and we forget the fact that there's no adjusting next year like they had to this year for a new coach, a new offense, a new defense. You know, they come in hitting the ground running next year. And the other part, Udoka saying, like, I haven't even incorporated all my offense in yet because I want these guys to get proficient at what, you know, they are doing before I incorporate everything. And you said you're seeing different stuff from him recently. I think that stuff was just going to come. I think he was basically, you know, holding some stuff back because he's like, yeah, let's get, you know, you've been a teacher, Vader, you know this, like you can't give a kid everything all at the same time. They can't handle it.
Right. And so like you've seen him even say like he's getting a lot of good data points. I think he said this last night as far as I see this lineup. We didn't really utilize this lineup or use this lineup very much previously. But now we're getting some really good information from it, some really good data points. And so over the summer, over the offseason, these are things that they can kind of look at. Like, that's why I kind of hate when people think that like Jalen and Shingun can't play together. To me, that's a coaching issue. That's not a Jalen Green and Shingun issue. We see all across the league and from, you know, as long as basketball has been played at a high level and been able to be broadcast on TV, you know, most good teams have a good big and a good guard combo of some sort. You know, like this isn't like we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. At this point, the onus is on the coaches to figure out how to best utilize the pieces that they have. And if you have a center who's capable of drawing double and triple teams, that is a good offensive player. That is a good offensive player. Like, I you can't convince me otherwise. Yes, you know, maybe him wanting to get a post up where Jalen Green is trying to drive is an issue. Okay, well, that's something that can be ironed out through coaching. Okay, so it doesn't need to be a my turn, your turn type of situation, but, you know, they can run plays that utilize some of the things that Shingun does best. And then alternatively, you know, at times they can do some of the things that Jalen Green is best at. And then, of course, we, like I said earlier, we've seen them play off of each other with precision. And it's looked great at times as far as like the pick and roll and Jalen Green. Like the one pass Jalen Green always has been able to make was a pocket pass to Shingun. Like we're finally seeing skip passes and some of these other things that he's doing recently. But the one thing that he always seemed to be able to do was get the ball to Alperen Şengün in a position where Alperen Şengün could score a basketball. So,
yeah, Jokic and Jamal Murray, they seem to have a real issue working with each other. I mean, you know, you can't have a big and a whatever. Shaq and Kobe, it was a problem. You know, whatever. You know,
that was just two alpha dudes who wanted to, like, when you have two dudes who are the best in the league at their position and they want the offense to be focused around them and feel like the other guy should take a back seat, then, I mean, maybe you get that. I don't think Jalen and Şengün, yeah, of course they have egos, right? They're professional athletes. They're very good at what they do. Of course they have some ego, but I think they genuinely like each other. And I think Shaq and Kobe didn't like each other that much at the time. So all I think right. this is a good problem to have, guys. Like this is, yes, in some respects, it's a problem because they play two different styles, but that can also be a plus. That can be very dangerous because, like, when one thing isn't working, you have a counterpunch. You have something else to go to. Not every team has that. And I think the Rockets, you know, you got two guys, 22 years old and a 21-year-old who you can actually build an offense around. I mean, like, a lot of people can't say that.
Yeah, it's rich people's problems if you're talking about having too much talent. But it's at Vader Sports. Hey, man, always good to catch up with you and good to finally have you on the show. Thanks a bunch.
Well, thank you for having me, man. This has been fun. I like it. Have me back.
Yeah, no question about it. We're going to do it again in the next few weeks. But we'll talk again soon.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.